May proceed.
Thank you, Judge Thomas. May it please the court. My name is Josh Evett, and I represent the City of Idaho Falls and Idaho Falls Power. Sitting with me at the council table is Ryan Armbruster, who's one of my law partners. In going through the Idaho statute at issue in this case, there seems to be one constant with respect to the authority a city has to use something as basic as providing electrical power to its citizens. And that is that those statutes essentially say to the city, city, you have to do a good job in providing electricity to your citizens. The statutes
require... It seems to me, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it seems to me that you're agreeing with me that the city may only do what it wants to do in this case if given the right by the legislature. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, though. There is
so we're boiling down to an issue of statutory construction.
We are.
And we're really talking about what statutes we have in the Idaho Code and whether they will allow what your client wants to do in this particular situation. Do you agree?
I would, Your Honor, with the exception of there is an explicit exception to the general rule that a city can only condemn outside of its limits when it is given the explicit authority to do so by the legislature.
Well, there's expressive words, or the power would be implied in or instant to the power, or they're essential to the accomplishment of declared objects and purposes, correct?
Correct.
And that's out of Black.
I'm sorry?
That's out of Black v. Young, 1992.
Correct. And it's also the public utility exception is found in all the major authorities that discuss whether or not a city can exercise eminent domain, has the implied authority to do that in the circumstances presented by this case. That includes McQuillan, that includes Dillon, and that includes the Nichols treaties. It also includes
You would agree, wouldn't you, that there are statutes which specifically authorize extraterritorial power, but this one is not one?
I would not agree with that.
Well, you've got 5328, which grants the power to acquire lands outside the southern limits for the purpose of constructing a cemetery. You've got 21401, which grants the city's power to construct and maintain aviation fields and airports and hangars and other aviation facilities outside of the city. But this particular statute, if we look at 7720, does not say outside of the city limits, does it?
Title 7, Chapter 7, which, as the Supreme Court, the Idaho Supreme Court has held repeatedly, is machinery, its procedure. No, it does not specify a geographical scope, but it doesn't specify a geographical scope for any entity that possesses the authority to condemn, whether inside or outside city limits.
Well, McKinney versus Anselmo, nonetheless, 514, seems to say the cities don't have the power to do it extraterritorially. You'd agree with me on that.
Your Honor, I would respectfully say that my recollection is that is not what McKinney says. And that was not a fact pattern presented to McKinney. The issue of McKinney was whether or not a landowner could condemn property of a neighbor in order to get to a highway.
Well, I understand what the statute or what the case was about, but it seems to suggest, by reading it, that cities don't have the power to do this extraterritorially. So I'm trying to find out where in the statutes the state has suggested that the City of Idaho Falls have this power.
It's the Revenue Bond Act, Your Honor.
It's the Revenue Bond Act.
It's Idaho Code Title, it's Section 50-1030, Subsection C.
Well, before you get into that, I just want to make sure I understand your argument. I think where Judge Smith started the question by saying, are we just talking about statutory construction? And you sort of say, yeah, but, I mean, is there a constitutional argument you're making? Or is it, we're saying, once the legislature grants the right of eminent domain, these are the generally construed powers that go with it?
Well,
I mean, the only reason you get to Nichols and the other authorities is where we're talking about the general right of eminent domain. But you're not making a constitutional argument, are you? Of the city's power.
It is provided by the Constitution and Title VII, Chapter 7 and 7720. That authority to exercise eminent domain was given by the Idaho legislature to Idaho cities.
Right.
And
go ahead.
And it's a bit of a difficult issue, and there really aren't any cases on it. But when you're talking about the state, and even when you're talking about things like sewer irrigation districts, which is what the Petwick case involves, the test truly is, under those cases, is the use a public one? Is it a use that benefits the public of the state of Idaho? And that's the end of the inquiry under Payette Lakes, for example, and under cases that interpret the state's authority to exercise eminent domain. So it's a very broad power.
No, I understand the general power, but I mean, I guess I just want to make sure we're on the same page. And the way I understood this case is that essentially we're talking about statutory construction and the powers that flow from the powers given to the cities by the Idaho legislature. And you were about to get into the revenue bond.
I was, because that, Your Honor, seems to be perhaps the clearest express grant of the authority in subsection C.
Go ahead and answer this. I'm sorry I diverted you from your answer, but I just wanted to make sure I understood it here.
Well, I guess my first question about the Revenue Bond Act, and I guess I'm trying to figure out why the Revenue Bond Act isn't allowing the city to finance acquisitions by issuing revenue bonds, if other sections allow it to do what it can do.
And the answer to that question, Your Honor, is the Viking Construction case, which dealt with an identical Revenue Bond Act in a different setting. Those the authority given by the Revenue Bond Act, it's all separate authority. There is no requirement under that act to, the legislature's not told cities you can only exercise the authority to condemn, for example, if you're doing an association with issuing revenue bonds.
Well, the reason I worried about this is this, and maybe I'm wrong. I understood that when we first put the Revenue Bond Act together, that in A, there was included a provision about for condemnation and eminent domain, but it was taken out and we shifted it down to C.
We did shift it down to C, Your Honor. C has always been there.
Well, I understand, but I understood that A had right in it a common condemnation eminent domain provision, but it was taken out.
Correct. And in our view, the district court's decision in even analyzing the fact that language had been removed from the statute in 1967 is error.
Well, some of us didn't write the statutes in Idaho, so let me make sure I understand.
Too bad.
Yeah. Our loss. But the Revenue Bond Act, as I understand it, appears to authorize get buying land to construct things outside of the city limits. Is that correct?
It does.
And it doesn't seem to me to make much sense to have that authorization and not have eminent domain, also given the provision of the Constitution that you're talking about. Is that essentially your argument?
That is essentially, yes, one of the arguments.
Well, if we look really carefully at 50.10.30 and we shift down to C, it says, to exercise the right of eminent domain for any of the works, purposes, or uses provided by this act. Okay, so this is eminent domain. And then it has some very important words. In like manner and to the same extent as provided in 7720. So it seems to me that what this says, if we're looking at eminent domain, that you don't get any more power than you got anyplace else. In 7720, that you're not getting an extraordinary power by this act, you're just getting the right to do it if 7720 gives you the authority to do it. That's what that seems to do, in like manner and to the same extent. And so, I'm having a tough time seeing why the Idaho legislature, in their all of their wisdom, I say that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, would put in a revenue bond statute your right to do this. And then I read the revenue bond statute, and it says you can acquire by gift or purchase or construct. So you could go out and acquire You could go out and annex, you could go out to the legislature and get this changed, you could annex the geography you want to condemn, you could have it gifted to you, but if you want to do by right of eminent domain, you're limited to what 7720 has to do.
The problem with that argument, Your Honor, and argue is this. That
it isn't an argument, it's a question. I mean, I've read, we're about statutory construction, and right. I'm trying to read this statute.
Right.
In all my wisdom, I'm trying to determine what the legislature is saying.
Right. The rule of interpretation is you can't, by interpretation, read a clause out of a statute. And that is exactly what that interpretation does. Because putting aside the final clause, the first clause clearly gives the authority to exercise eminent domain for any work permitted under the Act. What is one of the... And the work we're talking about in this case is a municipal electric system, and it is defined in 5029H as all of the municipal electric system, not pieces of it, not pieces that are just inside the city, but all of it. And so that's the problem with interpreting C in that way, is because it eviscerates the first clause.
Well, why does it eviscerate? You have to give, purchase, and construct in the first clause. Here, we're not gifting, we're not getting it by gift, we're not purchasing it, we're not constructing it, we're condemning it. And we ought not do that any differently than in 7720.
And I would answer that as, isn't the authority given in C arguably then the authority to exercise eminent domain with respect to works, existing works, works that are outside of city limits, including works that are outside of city limits, and that are allowed to be there expressly with the authority of the Idaho legislature.
So what, let's extend your argument. I mean, you say public works, it's a utility line, and you go over into Montana and condemn land in Montana, across the border here in Pullman, condemn land there?
I would not want to tread, and I would say, yeah. I would say probably not. That seems a little extreme.
Well, that's because, really, when you're talking about eminent domain, it's one of it's a vast power of the state, but it's confined because with the state saying, we are going to take your land, we're going to take your property, we're going to interfere with your property rights. And therefore, the concept of territoriality becomes important because you say, we are going to interfere with those property rights within our jurisdiction. It seems to me when you get out of the jurisdiction, then the power of the state, municipality, or whatever entity it is becomes weaker.
What is the... limit, if any, in the statutes on where you can build public works or power plants like this?
There is a geographical limitation, but of course the limitation is going to be dictated by the work itself. There have been a parade of horribles used in the case where if there's a ruling in favor of the city, then the city's going to be able to string a line up to Coeur d'Alene. That's not what the city wants to do. It's a very narrow issue. Could it? I mean, I think...
Well, yeah. that's a question.
Well, what's the limiting principle, though? That's what I'm trying to search for in your argument. If the city has the power to do this, where does that power stop? And how do we define it?
It stops with respect to the infrastructure that's an issue in this case. Infrastructure just to the north of Idaho Falls, infrastructure that's been there since the 1960s. The 44 kilovolt line has been there since the 1960s. The transmission capacity is no longer sufficient to provide power to the city and accommodate its needs in the future. Existing works, that is the limiting factor here, if the court is searching for one.
Well, under what authority is that built outside the city? Who owns the power plant?
The city owns the power plant. And the two existing substations, West Side and Sugar Mill.
Well, and so under what authority was that built, and what is the limiting principle for the construction of those? Is there one?
No, the city is allowed to own property outside of city limits under the Idaho Code. That's not disputed.
Right.
Now, if that happens so long
ago. So that just goes to the ownership?
Right, that just goes to the ownership.
Okay.
There are alternatives, right? You would agree with me? City of Idaho Falls could annex the geography they need.
They could, but there are always alternatives, and that's not really part of the test. And in Idaho, public entities are given the discretion to decide how to build their works, where to build them, how to improve them.
If they have the authority under eminent domain.
Correct.
They could have got this stuff by gift or by purchase. But we're really talking eminent domain, and you're suggesting it's under the Revenue Bond Act.
That C gives the authority, and also there is the implied authority to do it under the many authorities that both APR and the court cited in reaching its decision.
Has there ever been a finding in any place that the extension would enable the city to provide power at the lowest possible cost?
No. We didn't litigate the case that far.
Our questions have taken over your time, but we'll give you a couple minutes for thought.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the Alliance.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Brent Whiting, Director of Counsel Richard Hearn. We represent the Alliance for Property Rights and the numerous landowners that are members of that alliance. And we simply agree with Judge Wendell's decision. He made a very well-reasoned decision on this issue. This case.
Well, let me be practical for a moment. What's your beef with the city?
Our beef with the city.
Is it site? Yeah. You don't want these unsightly power lines there, or what?
That's part of it. This is farmland. These are farmers that use that land, and they've got these big power lines going over it, and it makes it very difficult for them to be able to use that, utilize that farmland and its site that's out there. But perhaps even more importantly, that's the audacity of the city to go outside of its regular jurisdiction and to tell people that live outside, people who get professional services to, doesn't allow these people to vote, doesn't allow them to do anything, to tell them, you have to let us put this across your property to benefit only us and the people who live in the city. And that's part of the beef that they have with this, is that they don't have any say whatsoever as to whether or not this system goes. They don't have any say as to the representatives that select that.
Well, the reason I ask is that, I guess to be blunt, is this a subtle problem? Because often one has to rise above principle and say, all right, as a practical matter, the city wants power, and maybe there's some other way to go to land, or maybe there's a price on it. And you don't have to answer me what the paths of settlement are, but is, in your estimation, this a settleable problem? Sometimes courts aren't the best way to settle these things.
Well, there's nothing in the record to establish the facts, but I do know that the offers made to the landlord
were
nowhere close to where they ought to be.
You tell me what I
know. Was that what you're asking?
Yeah, no, we have a mediation unit, and I was wondering whether or not that it was worthwhile to try to settle this problem, because a lot of these intricate problems take negotiation, and negotiation doesn't do. We're a yes or no. They have the power, they don't have the power. That's our question. But on the other hand, our mediation unit can sometimes work out solutions to problems that we can't. And so that's why I was asking you whether it was settleable or not. And I gather from your answer is yes, but everybody's far apart at this point. Is that the truth?
That would be accurate. This case originated in state court. As a 42 U.S.C. 1983 claim was attached to that, and that's why the city moved it into federal court. And our argument is not that the city cannot condemn property for power lines. Our argument is about where it can do that. It seems to be undisputed by the city, and really seems to be a nationwide standard, that the authority of the city to engage in its activities confined to a city limits generally.
Where do I find that in the Idaho Code? I mean, I looked at 7720 and it says any municipality at its option may exercise the right of eminent domain for any of the following uses and purposes. And it's in 7701. Then I look at 11 and it says electronic distribution and transmission lines for delivery, furnishing, distribution, transmission of electric power. There's nothing that says only in place where you have the power to do it.
That's correct, Your Honor. It doesn't say one where.
So where do I find that the city cannot do it extraterritorially if it's statutory construction not looking? Because I went, of course, to McKinney versus Al Selmo. But I'm trying to figure out, where do you go?
Well, McKinney is of course, a good case. If you look at the many decisions of the Idaho Supreme Court interpreting municipal powers, it's very clear that the court said that a city is a classic example of derivative power. That power is only what is expressly granted by the legislature, or which can be necessarily implied from those express grants of power. And from that comes the answer that a city only can do what it's told it can do.
Yeah, but there's no question that the city can buy land and that this is a public use, the provision of electric power to its citizens. And there's no question that it can buy the land, purchase the land for that purpose, right?
There is no, Your Honor, that's correct. There is no question that the city can purchase this property, and that generally the installation of the power lines would be
public use. And so does it really make sense to say that they have this, the power station is producing the power, and they have the people who need the power, and they can buy the land, they have the power to buy the land, but they, does it make sense to say they can't use eminent domain? What is that? Is that a logical decision for the legislature to make?
Your Honor, I can see some logic.
I mean, I come from a state that has done some legislative oddities as well, but I'm just trying to see what, if you were a reasonable legislature, why would you do that?
Why would you allow the purchase but not condemnation?
Yeah.
Partly because we've addressed in our alternative arguments about the constitutionality of cities stepping outside of its boundaries to condemn property of people who have no say in that city's government, no say in, don't receive any services in the city, and then to not only bring that for the benefit of the city members, but it wholly excludes those, that same group of people from being able to access or utilize that benefit at all. And so it makes sense that the legislature has granted the power to municipalities to exercise eminent domain, but to stay within their boundaries. That's where the people who live in that boundaries get to vote and elect for the government, get to operate that government through their elected representatives. To step outside of that box is treading on rights of people who have no say.
But the Supreme Court has upheld the use of eminent domain for projects that don't benefit the people whose land is being condemned, has it not?
They have, Your Honor, and our distinction is a subtle distinction from that, in that this goes a step further, and it not only just doesn't benefit them, but they are excluded from it. Because in Idaho, a municipal power company can only sell power to the people who live within its borders. With one exception, they can't sell to other power companies, transmitted there, but they cannot sell to customers outside of the city limits. And so those landowners are not only people who don't receive that benefit, but they are wholly excluded from receiving that.
What would it be different, though? I mean, as you know, in some circumstances, it's a private right of eminent domain. Of course, nobody's voting in those circumstances, and it may or may not confer any benefits. Does it really make any difference in terms of eminent domain theory?
Yes, there is.
I mean, I can understand the social argument and saying, look, we ought to be able to vote on this, and you're outside your jurisdiction. But on the other hand, isn't the focus of eminent domain theory the public work itself rather than whether or not anybody voted to have the public work go forward?
Your Honor, the difference is in the nature of what is who's doing the taking. You know, a private citizen, there are many things that a private company or a private citizen can do that a city cannot. I could go across the street and borrow $50 from my neighbor if I want to. The city can't do that unless it has a statute that says it can go borrow money through bond or whatever it means. Cities aren't governed by legal principles that are expressly granted to them by the legislature. And if there are some things that are necessarily implied from those express grants, well, then they can do those other things also. Now, keep in mind, the Idaho Supreme Court, which is the standard that this court's asked to apply, is Idaho law, and to apply the decisions of the Idaho Supreme Court to that. The Idaho Supreme Court has said that these implied powers must be indispensable, not just merely beneficial or helpful, but they must be indispensable to the power that they seek to enforce.
Well, I don't pause this argument. Look, I know you can drag out the parade of horribles, but really what we're talking about is existing facilities, and there should be at least some implied right, even if it's not within the statute, that we can't. We can conduct the power of eminent domain, enforce the power of eminent domain, to create public works or access to public works for our existing facilities. Now, why doesn't that make sense in terms of the statutory construction?
I guess with all respect, Your Honor, is that isn't the case in this case. The city does own some power plants that are south of the city. There's two of the south. They also have a dam up kind of north of the city, and they want to build another plant north of the city. The plant up north doesn't exist yet. What this project that they're wanting to connect the property for is for new infrastructure, for new lines that connect from these power, from this station, going up to what would be a new station, and back around down to the other station. So we're not talking about existing infrastructure.
Okay. Leaving aside the factual dispute, let's just hypothetically say that it only involves existing facilities. Why wouldn't that be a reasonable statutory construction?
In fact, Your Honor, the city is not required to provide a municipal power company. This is a voluntary activity that the city engages in. In fact, Idaho Falls is one of only a very small handful of communities in Idaho that has its own power. And so they're not required to engage in this conduct at all. Now, the city chooses to go outside of this limit to construct a power plant. Could they have built a power plant inside the city limit somewhere? Of course they could. They have the power to condemn land within their city limits. They could build it inside the city. They're not forced to go outside the city to acquire this property to build their infrastructure. Now, to say that the city can now, by going out and engaging in a voluntary act of acquiring the property, and now by doing that, establishing a right of eminent domain that did not otherwise exist, goes a little far. That the city can voluntarily act, create something that an act of the legislature did not create. And so there's... Why should the city be given any more benefit than a private party who purchases property? Certainly, I would want to make sure that I could use a property for the reason that I bought it before I went and bought it. If the city wants to be able to access that, have that property outside the venture, they should make sure they have the means to get it there first. To say that just by going to get it, now I have the domain, it seems to fly in the face of the standards that apply here. There are important standards that the Idaho Supreme Court has announced that I think are dispositive of these issues. And Judge Wendell seemed to agree. First of all, Judge Wendell concluded that these statutes did not expressly provide this power. It's just not there. And Judge Smith has commented on that numerous times, so I'm not going to expand on it. But the Idaho Supreme Court has also said that if there's any fair, reasonable doubt as to the existence of these powers, you know, as an implied power, then it must be construed against the city. And here, there's doubt all over the place as to whether or not the city has that power. And that's not a disputed standard. In fact, that's a standard that's existed in Idaho for 100 years. And I find that in cases across the country.
I'm wondering why it is you're opposing this, certifying it over to Justice Burdick and his colleagues. I mean, take nothing away from these two. They are much higher in authority than I on this court, no question. But they're not Idahoans. We got a Montana and an Arizona, and we got me. And we're going to be judging an Idaho issue. why is it you didn't let us just send this over to Burdick and plan and let them decide?
Your Honor, frankly, when we were below within the district court, Judge Windmill specifically offered the party. He said, I recognize whoever wins, loses this case is going to appeal it. And he told us, if you want me to set this up so that it goes to the Idaho Supreme Court, let me know, and I can certify the question to the Idaho Supreme Court. Otherwise, we'll move forward with summary judgment. Neither party asked for that. The city didn't ask for it. The city wanted to go ahead and have the federal courts decide this issue. We were fine with that, even though we started in state court. We're comfortable with the federal judiciary making accurate decisions. Because when it comes down to it, we're talking about words in statute.
But we are not. What we say in Idaho really won't have a whole heck of a lot of difference. I mean, the Idaho Supreme Court could look at what we say and say, baloney, the next time through. Why,
right.
why not give a definitive opinion about this?
Your Honor, that is a good point. I can't argue that that's not a good point. However,
I thought you were going to argue that that's fine with we're not finally deciding the question of Idaho law for all time, but we're here now and the case is getting old and it needs to get decided.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
Fine, I have Judge Schroeder making your argument.
Although I would think about it, she would say, well, sure, certify at the Idaho Supreme Court. There's no year, it's not developed.
Our clients aren't the city with a lot of resources. Our clients are farmers who live outside of the city limits, and they want to get this case done as quickly as they can because it's
expensive.
Very expensive. We go to the Idaho Supreme Court, we have another round of briefing, it goes all through again. There's just no reason to do that. The city had the opportunity to do that. They rejected it. I don't know. I imagine the court has read our brief opposing certification. We identified a number of cases that say that it's just not appropriate.
You think Judge Wooden got it right anyway?
Of course.
One of the litmus tests I use in looking at certification issues, is this a recurring problem for which the litigants in the state need an answer? And I guess I'll pose that question. Is this a recurring situation? I'll ask your colleagues in the city the same.
The lack of any definitive case law on that, I think my answer, I'm not aware of any other incident where an Idaho city tried to step outside of its jurisdiction to condemn land for other landowners for something that is not specifically authorized by statute. And I think that's another important point, Your Honor. And Judge Smith, I believe, brought that up before, is the Idaho legislature saw fit when they enacted these statutes. And mind you, these statutes were all amended on the same day in court. And they gave cities the authority for cemeteries to step outside the city limits to condemn property. They gave authority to airports to step outside the city limits to condemn property. But when they talked about power lines, they didn't say that. They just said that, you have the ability to own that property. Did not specify that cities get the power of eminent domain. We go to the Revenue Bond Act, which is exactly that. It's a Revenue Bond Act. Now, the city says that it provides an express grant. Judge Windmill concluded otherwise, that there is no express grant. And we have to point out, look at what the statute actually says. You look at subsection A, which is the one that talks about land within or without the city. I see I'm out of time.
Just finish your answer.
That says that they can acquire property within or without the city. It says by gift or purchase. Now, the prior version of the statute, which I don't think was inappropriate for Judge Windmill to get to, because there's either if Judge Windmill's interpretation is reasonable and theirs is reasonable, then we have an ambiguous statute. You look at the construction, you could certainly look at prior versions of the statute at that point. The prior statute took out the exact phrase that the city wishes was still there. That phrase was, I'm going to paraphrase it, but it says that you can purchase this property by gift, purchase, or by the exercise of the right of eminent domain. That last clause was omitted in the amendment of the statute. All along, that statute had subsection C that provided the procedure for going back to subsection 7-7.6. Now we've added all these words that we've defined into that list for which you can come in and domain under 7-7.6.
Thank you, Cass.
Thank you.
2 minutes for rebuttal.
I want to leave off with that point, which is that the way that rule was applied in this case, it was applied erroneously. Judge Windmill gave Judge Windmill, in interpreting those 1967 changes, expressly said, I'm going to give meaning to words that are no longer in the statute. That is not how it reads. I want to talk really briefly about airports, Judge Smith, to try to address some of your questions. That airport authority is interesting. It's found in 50-321. It's interesting because, for a couple of reasons, the statute doesn't even use the words eminent domain, and yet it's being held up as a model of clarity of the grant of eminent domain to the city to condemn land outside of its limits to build an airport. It says that a city can take over land. It doesn't refer back to Title VII, Chapter 7. I think that kind of contradicts this idea that C can't grant this power differently than is granted in other parts of the Idaho Code. My other point with respect to airports is there is no authority in that statute to build a road to the airport. There is no authority in that statute to build, for example, a transmission line to that airport. And are we really expected to believe, because I think the analysis in this case by APR would lead to this conclusion, that there is no way to connect that airport to the city once it is built outside city limits. And that gets back to your comment on Title VII, Chapter 7, which is that part of the Idaho Code gives the authority to condemn to build roads, and it gives the authority to condemn to build transmission lines and distribution lines. So I think that's an important statute to look at for those reasons. How is this power not indispensable to the ability of the city to do its job? The comment about the city volunteering or doing it of its own free will, the providing of municipal electric power, I kind of understand that, but the reality is the Idaho legislature commands this city, the city of Idaho Falls, to provide reliable and economic power to its citizens under 5302. It has to exercise its specific powers to benefit the general welfare of the city. And the city in this case can't do that. It doesn't have enough transmission capacity and it wants to improve it. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing on this matter, which will be submitted. We will shortly be in adjournment. I want to thank the audience for your kind participation. I want to thank Judge Smith for organizing this and allowing us the privilege of being here. And we will be in recess.
All rise.